Welcome to the Partner POV from Bloom Stories. Too often, a father's journey to parenthood is overlooked or trivialised, but dads go through an enormous transformation too, right alongside their partners. Both experiences matter and both deserve to be heard. Because when mums and dads are empowered, families can truly thrive. Welcome to the Partner POV. Today on the podcast, we have Simon. Thank you for being here, Simon, and agreeing to share your story with us. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I hear I'm the first or one of the first males that you're doing this with, Amelia.
You are the guinea pig, so let's see how this goes.
You're brave. You're very brave.
Thank you for agreeing to be somewhat of an experiment, but one that I'm really excited about and really can't wait to hear your side of the story. And before we dive in, please could you just tell us your name, your age, where you're from, what you do in life, and please tell us who is in your family.
Yeah, so Simon Barley, 34 years old. I try not to admit that, and I definitely try not to look it. My family, so I have my immediate family. I have my mum and dad that live in Stratford-upon-Avon in the UK, and I have my wife, Lydia, and newborn son Casper, who is 6 weeks old this Friday, believe it or not. That has flown by. We live in Canada. We've lived here for 5 years, and we loved the outdoor lifestyle. We loved skiing, and so that's sort of what drew us to live here. And in terms of work, you know, it's funny, I've always had this great work-life balance ever really since I started my career. But so people don't know what I do, and I always try and keep it vague and abstract so that they can never really cotton on. But the way you would describe it is I've always worked in either business strategy or technology strategy departments, doing a lot of planning and investment planning with those. And at the moment, I do that for a copper organization in Vancouver.
One of the joys of listening to your wife Lydia's story and what came across really strongly was, well, a couple of things to me at least, how much of a team you are together, and such a strong team going into this journey of parenthood together, which is wild by any standards. And as well as that, the really active part and the really engaged role that you've had throughout pregnancy, the birth, and as you go into your, you know, your first weeks of parenthood, that really came across in Lydia's story, and how your engagement and your partnership, your true partnership together, has resulted in a really positive, really joyous, you know, start. And it really, to me at least, it's a wonderful privilege to be able to speak to you on the other side of that story, because I want to hear all about it. I want to hear all about how you see yourself. And do you realize that you are that really engaged partner as well? So I guess where I would love to start is, what do you think has made you such a strong team going into this journey together? And do you recognize that in yourself?
Well, it's really nice to hear all those things said. What made us such a strong team? You know, when we met, we sort of hit it off immediately and had this like really sparkling relationship. And if truth be told, I don't think that's ever sort of gone away. I think we celebrated our 9-year anniversary in January just gone. And we've obviously been married coming up 2 years this summer as well. So we've always had this sort of, spark between us, and that's never sort of died. I can't, as you were speaking then, I was trying to think if there was ever a time where we had some troublesome times in our relationship, and I can't even think of that. We've had so many good experiences together. I think we've always been a team. I think it was like we were a team before we even knew each other. So I think that's just always been our natural role, is trying to make each other happy and also think about what makes the other one happy. We're just really fortunate that the things that make me happy also make her happy, and that's sort of, you know, where the chemistry happens. And so, and then in terms of being a team player for Lydia throughout this experience, I guess I have never really thought about my life more than 6 months out. I never have done that. I'm always a very much here and now person. So I never really thought about what it would be like to be the partner of someone that's pregnant, or what it would be like to, support someone at a birth. But I am pretty good at getting my hands dirty and rolling my sleeves up and getting in the deep end when something faces me. And so I think really I sort of put it off in my brain for a while, mainly because we both agreed to do that because we didn't want our current life to become dominated by what's going to happen in the future. But once we sort of draw a marker in the sand and said, by this sort of time period, we need to start planning for what phase two of pregnancy look like, what phase three looks like, what arrival looks like. I think then we just sort of chatted about it lots and said, you know, what does good look like for each other? And you speak to others, everybody has a perspective and opinion, which is nice. And I think you have to learn to listen, but filter a little bit and also figure out what works for you. Cause I don't think there is a golden rule textbook out there. In fact, we definitely have examples where we followed things to the T and it doesn't happen how those textbooks tell you. So we've had tough times together, not with our relationship, just things that we've had to get through. Lydia lost her father not too long ago. So we've had these experiences of navigating difficult times and challenging times together. So, and we've always come out the other side, you know, going into it strong, coming out strong. And so I think that it really is just our way of being together. I don't think we put a lot of thought into how we be as a team, because we've always been a team.
I mean, it comes across in it, and it's such a pleasure to hear that. And having known you both separately and now together, it is just so wonderful to hear you both chiming the same tune. And I want to get into all the details. Can we go back a little bit to a time before you met Lydia? Did you always know you wanted to be a father? You know, you said at the beginning that you don't plan particularly ahead. You know, you're living in the very present moment. When it comes to fatherhood, was that always in the long-term plan?
I always assumed I would have children. I don't think I ever had a stage where I didn't assume at one point in my life I would be a dad. I don't recall a stage where I ever felt I wouldn't. But in terms of, like, you know, I speak to Lydia and some of her friends, they've always had, and they've been so, like, as in, I think Lydia could have had kids 10 years ago. I think she was so adamant she wanted children, and right, it was occupied a lot of her headspace. For me, it was always like, that's future Simon. And you know, even at the grand old age of 34, I still feel like an 18-year-old. So even right now, while I have him and you can't take your eyes off him, I'm still in this warped mindset that to call myself a dad feels a bit strange. It like feels really strange because I'm like, well, I'm not old enough to be a dad and I'm not mature enough to be a dad, right? So I still got this really weird reaction to saying, oh, but I am actually doing this right now. But yeah, I always assumed I would be a dad, mainly because, you know, I had a very great dad myself. I had a very good relationship with my grandfather on his side as well. And I had some friends in my circle that have great dads and great role models in their dads. And I can see, you know, the paths and the lives they've lived because of some of the knowledge and that their parents or their dads have passed on to them. And so I did always assume it would happen to me, but I never sort of put tangible plans in place for it because I always just assumed, you know, that would be older Simon's problem, probably because I'm in denial that I am older Simon now.
You mentioned the knowledge, the wonderful male role models that you've clearly had in your life. Is there anything that you're taking with you, like any nuggets that you have in your mind as you go into this that you've learned from them or elsewhere that you'd love to aspire to or trying to aspire to?
The doors I've been open to be a free thinker and be open to my own experiences. Like my own dad is quite an opinionated person. That said, for me, he never sort of, I don't recall his opinions being my opinions. In fact, I argue with him all the time on different points of view. So the things I take away that he gave me, the free thinking, you know, the ability to take information in and make your own mind up on topics, to have an opinion around what I do in life. Like, he never really pushed me down a career path. And I've seen that with other good dads. It's very much, what are you good at? What do you enjoy? What are your strengths? And helping me to nurture those. And then in particularly if I look at the number of activities I'm into. That is purely because he just opened doors for me to try all those activities. And then the ones I enjoyed, I sort of stuck with. There was no pressure for me to stay in them. And so I think it's creating that opportunity for the person to pick their own path. And I'd love to do that for Casper, is just say, you know, here are a set of doors and I'm going to try and open as many of them as possible for you. But I'm not going to tell you which route to pick, because I think that's part of the excitement of life as well.
That's such a beautiful thing, and allowing them to go on their own journeys. Easier said than done.
Yeah, I absolutely right. And, you know, even it's funny, someone asked me the other day, they said, when are you going to put your first pair of skis on him? And I'm already going, I can't wait to do that. And so you are right, easier said than done. And I'm sure some of the things I love, he will love, and some of the things I love, he'll hate, and I'll be upset about those, but I'm sure I'll get over it.
Do you think that, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here, but do you think that the fact that he's your son and not a daughter might make that more difficult, in that you're able to project yourself onto him more easily, possibly?
I'm gonna answer the question in a slightly different way. Before we had Casper, we didn't know the gender, and that is a great surprise in life if you're the type of person that wants that surprise, because I know loads of people that are like, we didn't want that, we want to know, we want more certainty, and that worked for them. For us, I think we were quite happy not knowing. But it was really nice then, picturing when you're sort of fantasizing through the day or daydreaming or thinking about your life, you know, next year when he arrives, or they arrive, I should say, you don't really know that the image in your head changes each time because the gender's different, because you're like, well, I don't know what I'm actually having here. And it was really, a lot of people were asking me the question, what would you do if you had a girl? And I always thought I was desperate for a boy. And I think that when I had a lot of time to sort of self-reflect why I was so desperate for a boy, I sort of boiled it down to two things. One was because I'm an only child and I am a boy, and I haven't had any open experiences to young females growing up and seeing them develop, you know, day to day. And the second one is probably because I went from the age of 8 to 16 to an all boys school. So I probably have got this experience of, I understand how great it was to be a boy. I can't tell you, and like that, my childhood was outrageously good. I would go back to sitting in that Solihull school sixth form centre in a heartbeat. Like, we had a lot of fun as children. And so I always thought, I really, really want a boy. But now that sort of changed my mindset of saying, I think I would be more open to it once I sort of had that reality check of, it just scares me because I don't understand it. And so, no, I'd like to think, and it's easy for me to sit here now as a father of a boy and say, oh, I won't push my opinions or my ways on him, and I won't have these expectations because I can see myself in him. I'd like to think that I would be balanced, and if I had a girl or a boy, I wouldn't inflict them either way or treat, or, and it'd be interesting if we had a second, and if we do have a girl, to see if I treat them any differently and if I have hold them to different expectations. But I'd like to believe I wouldn't. That's easy setting in concept rather than practice, but yeah,
we'll all shape them in ways known and unknown, I guess, and mess them up in our own special way.
Absolutely. And the one thing I would say to you is, it's funny, is with him around, you want to become more of a model person. Like, you're already, in myself, I'm like, every day I think, well, if he could observe me doing these things in like 5 or 8 years time, would he be embarrassed of me or would he be proud of me? I think it does change your mindset a little bit on how you want to behave.
It sounds like you're a very reflective person generally, that you spend a lot of time doing that self-reflection, and some would call it that work, but it sounds like it's just innate to you. That sounds like a real strength going into this. It sounds like it's something you naturally do. Is that something that's true, or is it something you've worked on to get into that kind of very healthy mindset, it sounds like?
I like the way you framed it at the end, something that I've worked on, because no, I live life at 100 miles an hour. I'm a dreadful planner. I have too many things going on. And that's a recipe for never having time to self-reflect, actually, because there's always something happening. And even in the downtime, you either burn yourself out and you really are, you don't have the headspace for that, or you're like, no, I can't think of this right now because I just want to switch off. So what I would say I am not bad at is, if I want to get good at something, or I observe you know, a perceived weakness that I have, I will acknowledge it and try and do something about it. And so, yeah, I can easily see for us being parents, and we do this well together, we are quite good occasionally at taking a stop check together in our relationship and our lives and saying, you know what, we're not very good at this, or we're spending too much money on this, or we really need to start thinking about this. And, you know, changing your behaviors a little bit so that you can adjust rather than just keep the patterns going and expecting different outcomes.
So healthy. I'd love to know what expectations, if anything, or what did you know, frankly, about pregnancy, birth, the whole shebang, parenthood, before it happened to you all?
Whatever you watch on TV and in films, genuinely probably as little as that. I think, you know, I had a school friend, he had a child, I think his little boy is 6 now, it'll be 5 or 6. So sort of 6 years ago was, I think, the first time I actually had a conversation with someone in my peer group where I probably took a bit more notice of what they were saying or the things I heard than ever before. And it was interestingly, some of the things he said to me vividly came back to me the other day, just because I'd now lived through the experience. And it was interesting to think, God, 5 years ago, I had no idea what you were telling me. Now I actually understand those things you were saying to me. But I would say really zero. And I don't know if it's I wouldn't try and broad brush this. It's as a guy thing, I would say it's a me thing. If I'm not interested in something, I'm very bad at feigning interest, and I'm very bad at actually going out of my way to find out more. So probably because I just hadn't thought about it or had to deal with it, I probably didn't even actively pursue understanding more.
And tell me about when you found out that you were going to be a dad. What happened? What were the feels? What happened?
Yeah, I remember it well. I was away with work, and I could tell Lily was being a bit funny when I walked in the door, and we sort of sat down on the bed and she just said, oh, can I just chat to you for 5 minutes? And I was like, yeah, fine. So we sat on the bed, and then she said, I've got a surprise. And she said, close your eyes. And then she pulled out this positive pregnancy test. And it was really funny, even though we had actively said, now's the time, we want it to happen now. Like going back to my earlier comment, I was like, yeah, but that's going to be future Simon problem. And I don't have to like worry about the reality of that right now. So when she said, oh, this is true, two sort of things happened. One is I was like, I don't know if I believe this, partly because the test she showed me wasn't like obviously positive.
Mm.
And so I was going, are you absolutely certain? So there was like an element of skepticism where I was like, well, I don't want to really believe that because I haven't seen it. And then there was another side of me that was split between, oh shit, and oh my God, this is amazing.
Mm.
I just didn't quite know how to react. But I think after a day or two, I was like, oh my God, this is very special. And I think it just took me a day or two to let that news settle in until you go, oh wow, this is actually happening, right? And it's funny, even if you're planning like we were to have children, I still think when it actually occurs, you're like, there is a shock. There is a slight shock there, even though you go, well, obviously that will, if you're lucky enough, will happen. But there still was a shock there, and it's not like a jumping for joy shock. It's like a both jumping for joy come a, oh God, this is really happening. A little bit of the fear of the unknown thing.
And presumably, that what does this mean? Because also,
yeah,
as you are not carrying the baby, as you're not going through a physical change or transformation, I imagine that it must be much more difficult to actually internalize, realize, like feel what is changing in your life. How is that as the partner?
I'd love to, because what you said there really resonated. I observed Lydia was a mum from the moment that test was positive. Like her whole mentality changed, her outlook changed, the way she talked changed. Like things changed within her personality that you could just see immediately. I think for me, because I'm not physically changing over the time through the pregnancy, it is very hard to still get to grips with the reality. And there was a part of me that felt a bit guilty in saying, am I just in denial about this? And I did try and do moments of reflection and saying, am I in denial about this? And I thought, you know what, I'm not in denial. It just doesn't feel real to me because, you know, I'm still able to go to the gym. I'm still going out and drinking with friends. I'm still going up to the ski resort. Like life hadn't changed for me in a way that I thought, there's a series of events that means, you know, in 9 months' time, life will be very different. And it's just such a different experience to Lydia. And I'd say that the time, I sort of had two real big moments that hit me, but even then it wasn't like life was going to be so different. One was when we went to buy some baby things with my parents and we bought a pram and a car seat and we drove home with the car seat. And the other one was when we went to our prenatal classes, and you know, they were very different. I was very much at the time, yeah, this is happening, like this is really happening. But even then, it still doesn't feel tangibly real. And I've said the real point is when you're in the hospital and you see them. For me, that's how it felt. It's like, it's always this prospect life that may or may not occur that you're planning for. But then once they're there, that's very different. Suddenly the reality hits. And I realized then that's what Lydia had probably been having since day one, since she knows she's pregnant. And all these body changes are happening. But for a guy, I wouldn't say for a guy generally, for me, it didn't feel like that. And I have spoken to other dads that felt that way, where they go, the reality is when it comes and you go, this is happening. Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit to, did that create like a disconnect, would you say, between you and Lydia? What bridged that?
You know, the first trimester was actually quite easy to support her, I think. And the reason it was quite easy to support her was because she had noticeable changes that were going on, where you feel guilty, but more empathetic to what's happening to her. So she was getting sickness, not crazy sickness, but the thing I observed more than anything was chronic tiredness. For the first 12 weeks, she wouldn't get up in the mornings. Middle of the day, she'd be like falling asleep. I'd come home. If I came home from the office, she'd be asleep on the couch or in the bed. Just always, always shattered. And I could just see it with her just behind her eyes, even when she's awake. She's not fully there because she's just so physically tired. So, yeah, I found that bit a bit easier to help her, because the signs were so obvious that she needed some help. And I don't think you need someone to explain to you, oh, you know, and to do a bit of a check-in with you of, you know, this is what's happening to me. I think post that first 12 weeks, she had that second trimester. I mean, she joined CrossFit. She was going to CrossFit all the time. That's how good she felt. We climbed up. There's an island called Anvil Island with a little like Mexican top hat peak that we climbed and camped upon when she was like 5 months pregnant, which was, people thought she was insane doing that. But she did it. And I think that was the time that was probably a bit harder to help her, and where she probably had to give me a few more, you know, reminders that, oh yeah, don't forget I am pregnant. Because you could start to see that she was pregnant, but the way she was behaving and acting, you're like, well, nothing's really going on for you. And then I think the third trimester, she's so big at that point, it's hard to, you've got a visual reminder every second of every day that she's pregnant at that point. Like you've got that visual reminder just every second, where you go, okay, I'm never going to forget what you're going through now at this second. But I think that's where the one thing she kept having to check in with me on was, you know, we're making plans beyond the 9 month period, where I would probably still be trying to make plans as if it was just me or just the two of us, forgetting that actually there'll be three of us at that point in time. So I you know, as supportive as she might have thought I was, there were definitely times I can remember where she had to rein check me a little bit to say, you're not thinking as if there's three of us now. You're thinking as if you're still, there's just the two of us, and, you know, you have a little bit less of a responsibility next year. So I think the support I gave her would have been twofold. One is from things I'd read and learned. I did read that book. I should have brought it with me so I remember. We're Pregnant, that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And there's a dad and a mum version. And there are lots of tips and advice of how you could be supportive in there. So I actually really used that as a bit of a cheat code. There was one around booking prenatal massages. So I did that. There are easy things to make her happy in there, where she probably thought there were really big gestures. And I just thought, you know, I've been lazy and reading a book here. But there are probably other things where she thinks I was being really supportive, where looking back, I probably could have been more supportive. And she had to just check me a few times to say, I hadn't thought about the fact that we're now going to be a three. I still sort of thought, okay, well, once the pregnancy happens in the future, we'll be back to as we were. Sort of maybe a bit naively more than anything, not manipulatively or deceptively, just like more out of hope that nothing's really going to change and we're going to live the lives we currently are, right?
Yeah, and, you know, being fair on yourselves, like no one knows what life's going to be like at post-birth. Let's be honest, no one's got a clue. It's like a void that, well, I certainly felt that you were moving up to, and just really who on earth knows what's about to happen to us. So
exactly. And so you do your best, you check in. I did have some resources to, you know, sort of go through that, and there's things I did well and there's things I would do differently a second time, like anything, right? And you learn that the funny thing about it is you can read so much about pregnancy and birth, there is no replacement for going through the experience. Yeah. That was my takeaway, is that whatever you read, you will not come out the other. You can only prep yourself so well. You need to actually experience it to say that I understand this now.
Well, speaking of the experience, can we talk about, you know, the big day when labour kicked off? Can you just kind of share your experience? What happened?
It is, I would just describe it as a wild, wild day. It is a wild day. I've had people in the past say to me that the birth of their first child is like the best day of their lives. And maybe in 5 years' time, I'll answer differently, but I just don't understand how. Like, if I look at my wedding day, wall to wall of planned fun, I would not describe that day as wall to wall of planned fun. It just is not. So the way it panned out, it was quite funny. Casper was 6 days late at the time on Christmas Eve. And we'd got a bit bored because you sort of put your life on hold and you say no to your friends and your plans. But nothing was happening. So each day we're sort of going, well, what should we do today? And so I think Lydia particularly had said, well, why don't we go and do something tomorrow on the 27th? And I said, yeah, that's great. And so she said, you could go skiing with your friends and I'm going to go snowshoeing with my mum, because our mother-in-law was visiting. So she said, I'm going to go and pop around the corner because we've only got one pair of snowshoes, and I'm going to go and pick up some more snowshoes off Facebook Marketplace. So we drive around the corner to get some snowshoes, and on the way, there's some roadworks, and I hit a pothole where the roadworks were and blew the front tire in the car. And so I had to wait sort of 2 hours to be picked up by the equivalent Canadian AA. And as we're walking down the hill, about 15, 20 minutes from where the car was back home, she's just alluding. She's like, I have this suspicion that this is going to get the baby going. And sure enough, we got back quite late that night, a little bit tired and grumpy because of what happened. And about 3 hours later, she started her contractions, which was always going to be the way.
The pothole that started everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's either the pothole or the walk downhill, and maybe the both of them, but something got it going. And so it was really funny. In the weeks and the sort of 2 weeks beforehand, I've been referring to Lydia as Senora Fidget, because every night in bed, she would just wake me up with her just rustling around, and basically because she can't get comfortable, which is obviously one of the big symptoms of later pregnancy, is that lack of comfort and inability to sleep as a result. And so she'd just wake me up tossing and turning. And this particular day, she was tossing and turning, but coupled with it was this really heavy breathing. And so I sort of was drifted in and out of consciousness, and then came around and heard her. And I was actually faced away from her, but I could hear, and I thought, you know what, this is it. There's something in me that goes, this is it. So I turned around to face her, and she sort of looked at me and goes, it's happening. And I was like, okay, right, we're actually doing this. And we've done some prenatal classes before the birth, and it was really funny. It was like we'd had this plan of how we would want to tackle the day, and I wouldn't describe it as a plan, because a plan could fail. It was more like an overarching set of things that we would trial and error with to see if we could get her through the day, you know, pain-free, panic-free. And I think because of that course, when she told me, my brain wasn't panic. I was sort of into action mode, where I went, okay, great, right, this is what we're going to do first. And so first thing I did was sort of run her a bath. And we'd agreed, we'd watched a few videos of people saying early pregnancy bathing is great. Sorry, because, you know, it really helps them relax and calm down. So I ran her a bath. She was good with the bath. And so that sort of calmed her down. We're playing relaxing music in the bathtub. I was on the phone to the midwife and she's saying she can't come in until the timing around her contractions and the length of time. And so I said, that's fine. We'll keep you updated.
Do you remember what that threshold was?
So I think it was lasting for a minute every 3 minutes.
Okay.
From memory. Mm-hmm. And so she was nowhere near that. And she, but I think the problem was she was having quite a lot of painful contractions early, which she'd always thought early labor would be easy, but I don't think it was for her. And so what my strategy then was, she really wanted to have an unmedicated birth. And so what we'd agreed was we're going to have to spread the goodies or the treats across the day. Because I was really worried if she has them all at the beginning, there's nothing to move to and you don't know what how long this is going to take. So it's like if I eat all the sweets up at the beginning and then I've really got a sweet tooth still, there's nothing left to go.
Mm.
And so my plan was I'd set a little timer on my watch and every 45 minutes I was like, we'll go and do a new activity,
mm-hmm.
assuming it would take us 5 to 15 minutes to switch activities.
Mm-hmm.
So we started in the bath. We then moved to the lounge where we watched some Gavin and Stacey. I don't think Lydia had seen it before, so we were playing catch up to get to that Christmas episode that was on. It was really good, but it was really funny. While she's bent over the lounge chair, sort of groaning and moaning, Nessa is on the screen also giving labour at exactly the same time. And it's like they're moaning in parallel and Lydia's going, get this bloody thing off the TV right now. And I'm like, it was a good choice until that like scene, and then we should probably just stop. And then right after that, we did a little switch. We did some Harry Potter audiobook. And I kept trying to tell her, look, I'm gonna test you on the things you hear. What I really wanted to do was like get her mind thinking on what she's listening to rather than what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept trying to test her on Gavin and Stacey. I kept trying to test her on Harry Potter audiobook and saying, well, what have you just heard in the last 10 minutes? I'm going to sound like a really like, you know, really strict dad at the time. It's like, what have you learned? But I was really trying to distract her. And then I also was trying to move her body position sort of every half an hour as well. So not only change the activity, but say, you know, you've been on your left side for a while. Let's stand up. Okay. Let's get you on your med ball, like changing that position, which we'd always planned to do because we'd done a couple of both the prenatal classes and some pelvic floor physio told us, you know, here are some great positions, keep moving. And so her contractions sort of weren't getting near and she was getting a bit frustrated. So once we stood her up, her contractions moved a lot faster and they started getting towards the timeline. And so then I was panicking because we didn't have the car. I was like, how on earth are we going to get to the hospital? And so I managed to get a rideshare app.
Mm.
And there was a rideshare car about two blocks away. And I just kept refreshing it every half an hour until she was at the 3 minute mark. And so I had three alarms set, one alarm for her changing position, one alarm for her changing activity, and then one alarm to refresh the car. I was like, every 2 seconds, just checking my watch just to see what the hell was going on.
Honestly, the logistics that you're describing, I mean, you say like a strict dad or something. I'm imagining this is like football manager coach mode in like the best possible way. Like you are clued up. You have the plan. Clearly, you were prepared. You're in action mode, as you said, and you are providing a framework within which she can get to that birth that she wants, which just sounds brilliant.
Absolutely. You have to understand what she wants beforehand. Like at the time's trivial. And I think that's the thing that I will come on to how I felt during the later parts, because it actually gets harder. The home bit was perfect. Like it all went exactly as we hoped in terms of she found it harder than she thought she would. But we had a framework, as you said, and we sort of stuck to it. And we had some success with it. I think, and you have to take control as the partner, because they're not in a mental state to want to take control, right? In fact, sometimes they're so deep, the contractions, you're looking and speaking to her, but she's like looking through you. She's not looking at you when that's happening. Like, so the home was great. Get her to the hospital when she hits her time check. So I managed to get the ride share. Get her to the hospital. And that's when things started getting a bit more intense, I think. So there was a lot of people around. You move between rooms. There's a lot of beeps. There's a lot of checks going on. But eventually she gets into her room after doing some checks. and the room where she's going to give birth. And we ran another bath and we set up this spa environment. And it was going pretty well. At this point, she is in a lot of pain. She's finding them very intense to handle, but she's getting through it and we're sort of in the tub. I think that's sort of when it pivoted slightly from what was being, you know, the experience we planned to drifting away from the experience you planned, where they start put some heart rate monitors on her to measure the baby's heart rate. And every time she had a contraction, Casper's heart rate's just dropping off. And so the nurse in there that was measuring the heart rate just wasn't happy with that. So she brings in the midwife, who also isn't happy with that. So they bring in the specialist, osteopathician, that's it, bring them in to the room. And they sort of say, look, you've got to get out of the bath, Lydia. So we get her out of the bath. Now, that's a bit of an ordeal while she's still having contractions because she didn't want to walk or move. And then we get her onto the bed. While on the bed, they're still not comfortable with the heart rate of the baby. And so they start hooking Lydia up to an IV machine. So they bring more people in, took her up to IV in case they need to do any intervention. And then they're ready to go and do that like immediately. And they're sort of saying, look, the way the baby is, we might have to intervene here. And there are a couple of methods of intervention, like C-section being the last, other methods being forceps or pulling it out with a vacuum. And I think at that point you feel a little bit less, certainly I did, I felt less value. You feel more of a spare part in the room because you've got medical professionals in the room. They're also not sharing with you what's going on. So, because they're trying to communicate with Lydia, but the communication is not to tell her what's going on. It's like, Lydia, now you need to do this. Now you need to do that. Can you feel this? But they're not going through their thought process to say, well, if this heart rate doesn't get up, this is what we're going to go and do, or this is what we're looking for right now to know that things are good. So your anxiety, I think, moves up quite a bit at that point. Well, it certainly did for me, because you're going, well, not only am I not guiding the situation now, I'm not being kept apprised of what the situation is, and you're actually intensely in the room there. So then basically they said, look, you could, she was fully dilated. They said, you could push this now, but you're going to have to push it now if you want to get it out. If you want to do this unsupported, it needs to come now. And so the pushing phase came. She's in a lot of pain. And I can see by her face, she's sort of done with the ordeal and really just wants everything to just end. It was then she was begging them. She was like, I really want to get off my back and onto my front. And they said, okay, we can do that. And as she did it, she said, I can't do this anymore. I want an epidural. I want medication. I can't handle the pain. And they said to her, get onto your front and we'll talk about that. And I think it was funny, in the prenatal classes, we'd learn that if the mother starts saying that, that probably means you're good to go and that's about when it's going to come. Mm. And sure as word, she gets onto her front and the baby starts arriving, head appears, and they're like, you're doing this and you're pushing it. But it was still, even at that point, hard to watch because she was in so much agony and you're basically useless. You're just observing the process. You've got medical professionals in the room and you're useless, really, bar holding their hand and encouraging them to say, look, you're about to meet your baby. This is going to come. You're doing it. You're like about to be a mum. You just do anything in your power to at least give them some comfort just to get through the next sort of, you know, 15, 22 hours, whatever that time will be. Mm. Now, and she was really fortunate. That was a really quick push for her. Mm-hmm. And so then it came out and the baby arrived. And it's really funny. Once it arrives, your heart rate just drops and the panic all goes. And then all of the emotions come because you're just like, well, the overwhelmness of everything just suddenly happens, right? Because you go, well, the baby's here. She's not in pain anymore. They're actually look healthy. Like they're like, oh yeah, he's great. He's crying. Like this good sign. We'll give you to mum. Mum's holding him. It's like a bipolar opposite set of emotions just suddenly go, just like in the flick of a light switch. And then, yeah, then you're sort of there. You're like, oh crap, we've actually just had a baby and now we're a mum and dad. Like in the space of what, 30 seconds, you go from we're not parents to we're parents.
Wild.
And so, yeah, that really was, it was a roller coaster of emotions. And yeah. I sort of went to bed that night thinking I was shattered because we'd been up for 14, 15 hours and since 3, 4 in the morning. And I rolled over to Lydia and said, "Are you sleeping?" She was like, "I'm not." And you're just processing. Yeah. Like, there's all these things that are, you see that you've never seen before. And even though you're warned about what you're going to see, you've never seen them.
Yeah.
There's all of like the issues we had around his heart rate and then bringing specialists in where you go, "God, what the hell is going on?"
Yeah.
And when they're talking about interventions, you're like, "Okay, what's normal here?" And like, you're having a normal experience.
Yeah.
And then obviously all the pain she's in.
Yeah.
You're just processing it all. And so the way I would describe it is people say that it's the best days of their lives. I just don't see it as that. I would say it's probably one of the most memorable, but I wouldn't describe it as the best.
Yeah.
Just because it's like this, it is just no other way of putting it. It is wild. It's like all these things that you've just never seen or could occur happen to you. So yeah, it was crazy.
That shift from being so engaged in that first part to really what you're describing is a loss of control, having been a very active part of phase one, to that loss of control. And then seeing, as you said, both that heart rate dropping and not having anything in your power really to do anything, as well as seeing Lydia so vulnerable. What was going on in your head? You know, what were you, and as someone who's very action orientated, and as you said, you roll up your sleeves and you get stuck in. This is not a situation where you were able to roll up your sleeves and get actually stuck in. Like, what was going on for you?
Yeah, you feel pretty helpless and in the way, if I'm honest. And I guess the only thing that I thought was, you know, we had been told the whole way through the process that concept of encouragement. So, you know, I wasn't going to leave her side. I was always going to stay like as close to her as I possibly could and just trying your best. I think you feel powerless because you don't have a clue what's happening to the baby. And so there's a whole, and the birthing process. So there's a powerless thing there that you can sort of accept because you go, "Well, I'm in medical hands. I'm in a hospital. Like, that's their job, not yours." You accept that one. I think the one that is worse is she's in a lot of pain and she's psychologically checked out and exhausted. You can't fix that no matter what you think you can do. Like, there's no quick pun or there's no magical thing you can say to them that or just snap them out of it. It doesn't work like that. So you feel pretty powerless. And I think the only thing that you can do is just stay encouraging and supportive. Like, that's literally the only lever you have. And the reason what you have to accept is you're not going to get any thanks or feedback from that. It's like, if you're doing something, she's not going to say, "Oh, that's better" or "good." She's so distracted on what's going on. You just have to assume if what you're doing is wrong, she will tell you if it's wrong. And that's literally all you can do. So, yeah, it's just, as I say, you can't, people have talked about that bit, but until you experience it, I don't think you really get it. I think sort of the way the prenatal class nurse described it to me was, you can't fix them. Like, don't try and fix them. And it's funny, like, you in your life, you always think you can. And so I certainly, when we ran this stupid, I say stupid, it was probably the best thing we did, simulation of a birth in our prenatal class, like an Amdram scene. It's quite funny. I got pulled out as being the person that had to do it with her, which was quite a funny experience. So she feigned a pregnancy and she was really good, scarily good at it actually. And all the time I'm asking stupid questions like, "Are you okay?" And she's like, "No, I'm not fucking okay." Like, and so I had this experience, a little bit of understanding of, you can't just do this magical thing to them and just make everything go away. It's not going to work.
I love this like weird dress rehearsal. This is great and also really odd.
It was odd, but it was, I'm actually glad I got picked out of the, I think we're in a class of 30 or so to do that, because I would have made all those mistakes that I made in that class when it really happened that I didn't matter. I was asking her if she's okay. I'm asking, "Can I get you anything?" And she's like, "I don't know." Yeah, like you're asking all these questions thinking you're being helpful and you go, "Actually, none of this is helpful."
It's like, I don't have a brain right now. Like, yeah, ask someone else.
Yeah. And then that's when I realised a bit, like, I need to get to grips with what's going to happen on the day and probably take some control, because she's not going to be able to.
Oh my God, what an insight. And well done, that prenatal course. That sounds like
100%.
Yeah, a really, really important kind of mindset shift that happened because as a result of it. What was it like holding Casper for the first time and meeting him?
Yeah, so I held him And then we did, they call it the golden hour here. I don't know if you do it in the UK, but that's what they call it here. Like where they give mum and dad or whoever's got the babies, the partners, the babies, and everyone else leaves the room and you just get to basically be with them for an hour. It all just hits you and you're just looking at them and you're just in awe of them. I think you're not even thinking at that point. I remember everything bad that I'd just seen or all the anxiety or panic that we just had is just flushed away and you're just in awe of what you're looking at. And I don't think you can quite believe it. I think at the time you're saying your brain is trying to comprehend what's actually happening and you're like, that is my baby. And you're going, and it's brand new. It's literally like less than 30 seconds old, less than 5 minutes old. And you're looking at it going, this is mad. And they're looking up at you. I don't know. It's a very hard thing to describe, I think. Because, you know, if you're lucky in your life, you do that once. If you're very lucky, you do it twice or three times. But you're not going to do it much more, right? Particularly with the financial constraints of doing that these days. And so you're like, this could be the first and last time I ever do this. Mm. And so I think that hits you a little bit at the time. Well, it certainly hit me. Where you go, this is absolutely amazing. Yeah, it really was a special moment. And so that moment I could describe as probably one of the best moments in my life, definitely. Just not the whole, I wouldn't describe the whole day as one of the best days. The day was a roller coaster.
And did you look at Lydia in a different way?
I saw her a bit as like a super, you see them as like this superhero, superwoman after their, like what you've just witnessed them go through. I don't think, like I say, I think your exposure to pregnancy, if you don't bother reading anything, is TV and dramatized TV. And so until you actually witness it, you go, I can't believe what you've just achieved and gone through. And the mental strength to do so is just ridiculous. And then the nice thing is it was funny, about an hour ago, she was talking about all the things that she wants to get on with today. And then I went in to make a coffee and she's just sat there holding him, looking at him. Mm. It's lovely watching her like besotted with this thing that she's essentially grown and made. Mm. And it's like this unexplained, unconditional attachment that's there that you can't describe why it's there. It's like that, it's all instinct. You're really proud at that point in time of them. I would describe it as really proud. You just, yeah, of what they've just achieved. Sat in this seat now, I feel a little bit, I wouldn't say disappointed in myself because that's probably unfair. There's been a lot of like friends or people close to me that have had children the last 5 years. And I wished I'd have shown a bit more care about what they'd gone through. Because now I have a child, I realise how special their experiences were and how important that is to them. And I think at the time I was just oblivious to all of that.
As we all are before we go through it. So Casper's 6 weeks old on Friday, you said. What have these six weeks been like?
Practically, we're still figuring out. We learn something new every day, which is great. Like, it really is great. And we've just had this really fun 6 weeks, I would describe it. He's arrived. He's a bundle of joy. It's lovely to watch how much joy he brings around you to everyone. In fact, what's the funniest thing is no one cares about you anymore. We have friends that live around the corner. They've popped over more since he's born than they ever have done. And they never, like, even if I'm not here, they still come. So they don't. No one cares about you anymore, which is funny. It's really funny. Lydia's obviously having a really mixed bag with sleep and feeds because they don't have a routine at this age. He's generally pretty good. So depending on the timing, if he's just fed or just awake when I get up, I'll try and take him out of the room. I won't always do that. She sleeps a bit better when he's not in there, and I'll sort of take work calls or things for the first 2-3 hours and just have him in the cot, or I'll hold him. And then I've tried to basically take on all the house tasks. So I've tried my best to do all the washing, cleaning, cooking, and keep the house in order, basically. And then she's essentially, obviously, primary feeding him. And then when I'm not working, I will try and basically do all of his nappies. I generally just try and do all of the things that I can't do when I'm not there. And it's funny, you're really worried beforehand that these things are going to be unmanageable. You sort of just do them. It's really funny. I feel like I've always had him, I feel like he's slotted into the our lives perfectly. He doesn't feel like a burden. He feels like a treasure. And it hasn't been one moment where I go, oh, well, I can't do this because of him. That it just hasn't been like that at all. And it's one of the things I wish people knew more of was the great bits. Like, there's not enough talked about the great bits, and all the negatives, I think, are generally wives' tales, or they're actually not true. And for whatever reason, that's the bit that people focus on. And I don't think that's actually the case, to be honest.
But I love what you're describing, which is the perspective shift there. It's no longer, oh, I can or can't do X because of them. It's, no, my world is them, and they fit in perfectly because they are now my world. And it's not no longer about, oh, I'm missing something in the outside world. Like, our world is right here, and it's perfect, and we need nothing else. And actually, your entire perspective has shifted. Does that make sense?
It really does. And people have asked me what it's been like going back to work. And what I would say to them is, I've seen a stark shift in my discipline. And my discipline being about this, you know, my time management's better. So if I'm due to leave work at 4, sometimes I'll be like, you know what, I can't be bothered getting the bus right now, and I'll work a bit later. Or I'm meant to go to the gym at 12, and it'll get to 12, and I go, you know what, I'll just do the post-gym work, post-work gym, because I can't be bothered right now. You don't do any of that. You go, no, actually, I'm going to go to the gym right now because I want to see him after work. Or, you know what, I'm going to go home right this second at 4 or 5 or whenever it is, because I've got to get back to be a dad. And you, but that, it's, and the way I'm describing it is a chore. It's not, you want to do it. Like, there's no element of you that thinks the other way. I'm actually thinking, you know, I need to go and do these jobs so that I can spend time with him. It's actually made us more disciplined around the house, because we're like, well, we want the house to be nice, so when the weekend comes, I don't want to be cleaning the house. I actually want to just be doing stuff as a three. And I guess the nice thing so far has been we've both tried to keep a little bit of our own identity as well. So it's, Lydia's still trying to get to her flute and her orchestra. I still play in a band, and I've managed to get up to the ski hill a few times. We're hoping she can ski soon as well when she recovers. So it's not like your only identity then becomes, oh, I'm Simon and I'm a dad. It's like you still have your own, you know, hobbies and experiences and things that you enjoy. But like you say, there's this thing in your back of your mind that you look at the world in a different way, and you go, not only am I responsible, there's a huge responsibility thing that comes out in you that you don't know will come out. But I think the bigger one is more the joyous thing, where you go, and that always trumps the responsibility one anyway, even though you will do it just on responsibility, where you go, actually, there's a lot of richness to be had from those experiences that you didn't think were available to you.
It can be a lot harder, obviously, for the mother to maintain some of that identity, and especially in these early weeks. And you're only 6 weeks in. And even with recovery and being in the depths of newborn weeks and learning this new job, you've managed to maintain your identity. But it is a lot harder for the mother, I think, to maintain any of theirs. The fact that Lydia's got to her flute lesson or orchestra, that speaks volumes. And I just wonder, I think Lydia said that you really encouraged that. Was that something that you were really conscious about?
I think we're very aware what's important to us in our lives. And I would suggest that there's certain things that were important to us before having a baby that even since having a baby, we're going, you know, those are still important to us. And so now we're saying, well, now we need to find strategies as a team to figure out how those important things can still be maintained whilst, you know, doing our responsibilities, but also recognizing there's other important things now that we're going to want to balance in our lives. And I'm sure we will have arguments, and I'm sure we'll get it wrong, and I'm sure there'll be times where we do it wrong, and that will be just the experience. But I think so far we've really enjoyed it, and we try and encourage each other to not ask for permission, just be a bit more transparent and say, you know, there's this thing coming up in 3 weeks and I'd really like to go to it, and here's why. And accepting that probably means there'll be another day where the other person's got the similar feeling and you're going to have to repay the favour. And I think generally that's pretty nice. Like, I think next week she's leaving with me with him one whole evening, which she hasn't done yet.
How do you feel about that?
Funny, I'm not even, you like, oh, does that mean I'm in the house with the baby all day? I look at it the other way. I'm like, that means I'm in the house with Casper all day. You know, it's a, you, it's a completely different spin on the way you think of it. Just had this one fear of the three of us being sat in a house together and we don't know anyone anymore and we don't know anything that we enjoy anymore. Mm. And I think, like, I think it's that fear that's driven us a bit to try. You know, he went up to Whistler week three with us and came and slept in a van week four. Like, we're already like, oh, we're going to bring him on this journey.
What I'm hearing is, like, identifying as a unit, what are the things that we are not going to compromise on because they are important to you and your well-being and your identity as a family as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
What surprised you most about the pregnancy or the birth or becoming the dad?
The positives, just how great it all is. Like, that, I didn't expect to find it this fun and enjoyable. And at this early age, I thought that would come later.
What's something you wish you'd known before becoming a dad?
Oh, that's a great question. More about the experience from the mum side and more around what they're going through and how different it is for you. It's just... now I've been through it, there's things I'd do differently if I'd have known that beforehand.
That's my next question. What is something that you would want to do differently second time round?
I think just make more acknowledgement on a more frequent basis to Lydia that, yeah, I'm aware this is happening. And, you know, showing behaviours in things like planning or actions that show, yeah, we are going to make a shift. I'm starting to think as a three. I'm planning as a three rather than trying to pretend I'm living in an old life. I think that would be the biggest change.
Give us a good baby hack or trick or tip that you've learned so far.
He absolutely, well, this is obviously not available to everyone, but he, for whatever reason, he loves being on the piano. So I put him in this little sleeper thing and put him on the piano and play piano to him. And I think it must be the vibrations or something because I'm not an amazing piano player, but
And I'm unsurprised given that Casper is your son.
He just sits there like, yeah, he doesn't move an inch and he just sits there like in space. It's really lovely.
Oh, that sounds gorgeous. What's a funny moment that you've had so far?
Oh, there's been loads, but I think the one that got me the other day was we were in a real rush and he was just being a bit fussy, which is a bit unlike him. And I was like trying to, I was sort of like lifting him up and down, like trying to make him happy, like play with him. And I was in a real rush for quite an important meeting at work. And I just got like shirt on, tie, everything. And as I'm throwing him like that, I just throw him up and he just literally threw up all over me. And so I had to go in, I didn't have time to change. I had to go into this meeting and just be like, by the way, sorry, this is my 4-week-year-old son that's just done this to me about 5 minutes ago and I'm really sorry about this. But they actually loved that. That's what it was. The minute I told them, I was like I haven't been sick on myself. This is someone else. But yeah.
I love that. That was like initial train of thought. I'm going to pick one last one because we're running out of time. Well, similarly, can you give us just a totally joyous moment that you've had so far?
Easy. So easy. He smiled for the first time last week when I was holding him, and I will remember that moment until I die. I think it was unbelievable. It was so wonderful, and all day it makes your day. 100%.
What a note to finish on. And thank you again, Simon. This has just been wonderful to hear, and all the love in the world to you three and your little family.
Thank you so much, and to you, thanks for having me.
That's the end of this episode. Take care and see you next time. If you enjoyed this episode of Bloom Stories, we would so appreciate it if you could rate, review, or subscribe. Apparently, it will help other mums know that we exist.